Here is Lisa Wexler.
Well, we have so much to talk about in this hour. I have so much to tell you. 203-333-9422, but I want to hear from you. I definitely want to hear from you about your thoughts about everything. Let me just tell you, you know how death comes in threes? There have been three pretty sudden, traumatic, awful deaths in the last, 24, 48 hours in our community. You've heard about Melanie Coleman. That was a horrible freak accident of this magnificent young woman who was a superb gymnast, a champ in every way, one of five siblings, a local family here in Milford. She died doing a practice routine. She was injured. She fell somehow, and she injured her back critically and was brought to Yale Hospital, and she passed away on Sunday. Her family is allowing her organs to be used for others to keep other people alive and healthy. And our condolences to the Coleman family in clearly what is such a horror tragedy. The woman was a nursing student. All she knew how to do was help other people. And her life came to a tragic, sudden end. And now I'm hearing that yesterday morning, a man who was doing construction work in the Sono collection right in South Norwalk plummeted to his death. He fell during the early morning hours at 2:39 a.m. He was doing some work there at 100 North Water Street. Lieutenant Terry Blake with the Norwalk Police Department reporting that the man fell from an elevated height, and arriving officers transported him to Norwalk Hospital, but he later died. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration is investigating that. And we don't know anything else about the man. I don't know his name, and he's been as yet unidentified. This poor man doing his job, falling to his death. And then we had the accident on the Merritt Parkway. What was it, Sunday evening? Some woman, her car rolled over the guardrail, and she also passed away. Just three deaths in what seems to be the last 24, 48 hours. Pretty horrible stuff. 203-333-9422. And it sometimes happens that way, right? It sometimes happens that way. I want to talk about a lot of other things that are also going on. Let me first address Scott Hapgood. Scott Hapgood says he won't return to Anguilla. So Scott Hapgood is a Darien father of five, and he talk about a vacation turn nightmare. You couldn't make this up if you were in a movie. The man is in his own hotel room, minding his own business. And he's with his daughter, young daughter. And by his account, a man who he believes works for the hotel because he has his own access and room key, comes into the room and acts like a maniac, starts attacking him. And in order to defend himself, this man, Mr. Hapgood, was a former football player. He's nobody's fool and he's no pushover. And in order to what he perceived as defend himself and his daughter, He did a move, or he made an arrangement, and the man was unconscious and later shown to be dead. So in the initial aftermath of this, he was accused of causing a homicide. He was accused of killing this man in some altercation. Now, he's a rich white American, and he is, as a tourist, the lifeblood of this tiny little Caribbean island called Anguilla, and he was at the Maliwana, which is their five-star resort. And so a lot of the people, it becomes a little bit of class warfare. A lot of the people in Anguilla are like, what do you mean he left the island? What do you mean he's not here to face our version of justice? But in fact, originally bail was denied by a judge, and he was set to be incarcerated there pending the trial. But he hired local counsel, which appealed the decision to deny bail to their higher court. And their higher court said, no, he can go back and resume his life in the States as long as he promises to come back and stand trial. And that's what he promised to do. And steadfastly, he has said all along, Scott Hapgood, that when the time came, he would return to stand trial. So here's what happened in the interim. In the interim, after the initial belief that whatever it was that Scott did to defend himself caused the death of this man, the forensic, the man who was the medical examiner in Anguilla, came out with a report and said, this was not a homicide. This was a death as a result of extreme toxicity in the blood of this man who had a lot of drugs in his system, and it caused his body to shut down. And whatever else this was, however else this man was defending himself, that's not the proximate causation of the death of Kenny Mitchell, 27 years old. And so in the wake of that, people in this country have said, including President Trump, that Mr. Hapgood is evidently innocent. There isn't proof that there was even a homicide. and the man should not have to stand trial and the charges should be dismissed. Well, yesterday, Mr. Hapgood was faced with a very difficult choice because the charges were not dismissed in Anguilla. And in fact, he found out that the judge who originally denied his bail was going to be the judge overseeing his trial. And so he and his attorney thought, you know what? I'm not going to get a fair trial in Anguilla. Ever since I left, the people of Anguilla, who would be my jury, have been angry and resentful that somehow I bought my way out of justice. And they'll have the right to incarcerate me indefinitely. And not only that, if they do, I'll probably get killed in jail itself. There'll be some kind of plot against me. I won't have any weaponry or anything to defend myself. And so this becomes class warfare in Anguilla. And so yesterday, because of the threat of possible death, because death threats have been levied already against Mr. Hapgood from here, because of his belief that he believes is reasonable, that he can't get a fair shake in Anguilla, he's decided he will not return. Now, you talk about a family vacation. This is like a one of those horror films. Hapgood is on leave from his job as a UBS trader. And on Monday, when he was supposed to appear at a Caribbean court, he did not, which means a failure to appear obviously incurs more potential charges. His lawyer, his quote, family spokesman, Jamie Diaferia, said despite the unfairness of the charge continuing, Scott has cooperated with the Anguillan legal process and has returned to the island three times for hearings in an effort to clear his name. But it has become progressively apparent that Scott would not receive a fair trial in Anguilla. During the process, a toxicology report was suppressed. Witnesses altered their accounts, submitted new statements that were false. A revised cause of death was ignored. Legal counsel was excluded from the hearing. Numerous other actions that suggested that politics are governing Scott's case rather than the law and the facts. So, Mr. Hapgood, facing a decision about whether to be technically a fugitive from justice or stay here for his own safety and well-being. Remember, he's a father of five. He's a husband. He's had no criminal record ever. And the facts seem to suggest that there was no criminal action here at all. He decided that he wanted to protect himself. You talk about a difficult decision to make. This is a man who's been an upstanding person his entire life who wants to have his name cleared. But he can't make that happen. And so he'd have to take a risk that a jury in Anguilla would acquit him. And he's not willing to take that risk. Query to you. Would you take that risk? 203-333-9422. If you were in the steps, if you were in the shoes of Scott Hapgood, would you return to Anguilla to face a jury and to face the judge that had formerly denied your bail and had been overruled by a higher court? With the chance that you would have to be in jail pending the outcome of the trial altogether? What would you do? 203-333-9422. What would you do? 203-333-9422 is the number. It's 14 minutes after 11 o'clock. Okay, other things to talk about. Project Nightingale. Project Nightingale. Sounds like a very... Sounds like a really sort of nice, friendly name, doesn't it? Well, Google is seriously being accused today of violating its motto. You know what the Google motto is, right? Do no evil. So apparently Google had made a deal with Ascension, which is a company that owned St. Vincent's Hospital, which was recently bought by the Hartford Hospital System. But St. V's in Bridgeport with its mental health hospital in Westport. Apparently, Google secretly gathered millions of patient records across 21 states on behalf of Ascension in an effort to Project Nightingale. And neither the providers, doctors, nor patients were made aware of the effort. Let's go to Dave from Trumbull. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the show today. Hello.
Hi, Lisa. Great show. Always enjoy your great, interesting news topics.
Thank you. Thank you.
And, you know, Lisa, before I give you my opinion about this family and what happened in Anguilla there. You know, here's the question. Where are we safe? Where are we safe? Are we safe in these countries or in Mexico or in church, a movie theater, a synagogue? Where are you safe anymore? And this man, the father of a family, took the matters into his own hands to protect his daughter. And here's a fella in the hotel room going berserk or crazy, as you said. Number one, by the law, I would not go back to Anguilla either. You're not going to get a fair trial. And these people are looking at you like you murdered one of their countrymen. Okay? So what's happening, I think this case, and you being a very, very smart attorney, knows that this case is an illustration of when Americans travel and just try to get away for a safe time, you must defend yourself, and you have to, people are taking matters into their own hands.
Well, he's not accused of having any weapons. Somebody broke in. He was in his own hotel room, right? And you know, your hotel room, it's very interesting, Dave, but as a matter of law, when you rent a hotel room, it's like your castle. It's your home, right? In other words,
right.
You occupy it, you pay for it, you have a right of privacy in your hotel room. The law goes back way, way back. You know, the law about inns and lodgings. You have a proprietary interest in the safety of your room. He wasn't even in a public lobby. He was in his own hotel room.
Right. And you know what, Lisa? This is connected also to your previous conversation. Not about automatic weapons, but I mean handguns in general. And people are arming themselves and trying to travel in a situation where they are safe. If you're going to pay for a hotel room, you must feel safe in the hotel room. And if I was this man, I wouldn't go back there either for a trial. What now, let me ask you, from a legal standpoint, what can they do to him?
That's a really good question, and I have to do a little research. But here's what I would be concerned if I was his lawyer. This is what we call issue spotting, Dave, okay? I don't know the answers, but I would say here are some of my issues in my head. One of the things I'd want to know is what would be the effect on my own passport? In other words, is Anguilla part of any kind of a treaty with other nations so that if I travel outside the United States, I might be blocked from coming back into the United States and have to be extradited from where I was to go to Anguilla. That would concern me. That would be my numero uno concern.
Well, you'd have to check that out before you travel.
Yes.
I mean, if I was this guy,
yes.
I wouldn't want to be traveling soon anyway,
well,
between you and me.
But you'd want to know. But listen, he's a businessman. The world is a big world. He would want to know what could happen to him if he steps outside United States jurisdiction and also inside jurisdiction. So here's what could also, this is what, again, if I was his lawyer issue spotting, I would want to know, well, what is the right, if any, of Anguilla police to extradite me to Anguilla, to force me to face the charges there? Because we have treaties with other countries. We don't like people that escape from law for obvious reasons.
But legally, mm-hmm. where is the responsibility on the part of the hotel here that this individual got into a room? I mean, aren't they responsible?
Well, so that's a good question, and they may have a lot of civil responsibility, but they are not criminally implicated here. The question would be, so here's another question for another lawsuit. The question would be if they hired this guy Mitchell, and if the the Hapgood family can prove that Mitchell was not in his right mind, which it looks like a toxicology report could prove, then yes, the hotel would be liable for giving this man access to his hotel room without question. Absolutely.
Was he a worker there?
He was, yes.
He was a worker there.
Yes.
You know, here's the thing. You know, as the world is changing so much, so fast, faster than we can keep up with it. As soon as we think we got it figured out,
it's changing again.
And when the day comes and you cannot go into a synagogue without wackadoo coming in with, I mean, where are you safe? I grew up in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and my mom I remember she didn't even lock the back door.
I know.
Okay?
I know.
I mean, we all grew up at the same time.
Yes.
You know, and the screen door was open all night.
Right.
Now,
right.
You can't even go to a theater. They're checking your handbag for a handgun to go to a movie.
Well, I'll tell you what it really raises, Dave. It really raises the question of whether or not all these mass shootings are forcing people to even be less likely to be in groups. And it's a real shame, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if you heard, but the day after I came back from Yom Kippur, I talked about the fact that in Central Synagogue, which is a big synagogue in Manhattan, the rabbi thanked people for coming for Yom Kippur, thanked them for the courage to walk into a synagogue. And I was like, are you kidding? This is America, and we have to be, quote unquote, appreciated for gathering together as a group? How sad is that?
And now what happened in Pennsylvania, I think it was Pittsburgh there, the rabbis have gotten together to get their own armed forces outside the synagogue at time of service.
I know. I've seen that here in Westport.
So you go in to make prayers.
I know.
And there's a man with a machine gun.
Right.
I mean, this is getting so crazy. So to come full circle and answer your question, which is a great topic, you know, I would not go back there. I don't think this man, you know, did anything wrong. We were not in the hotel room, so we don't know what happened. But all I'm saying is, from the way it looks here, an intruder in your room at any time. You know, let me just tell you, you know, in part of my life, I lived in Dallas, Texas, and I worked on a ranch there. And I was amazed to find out, do you know, if someone comes on your property at night and you shoot them and they're dead, nothing happens.
Yeah.
The police, they take the body away and that's the end
of
it.
Wow. That's Texas,
okay.
Huh?
Okay, yeah, I mean, well, it all started, of course, with anybody comes on your ranch or tries to steal one of your horses, or they catch you on your property, and it's not your property. You're shot in the middle of the night with a shotgun.
Yeah.
Because everybody down there is carrying. You know what happened? Nothing happens.
Wow.
They take the body away like it never happened.
Thank you, Dave. Sounds like a Western movie. Thanks. We'll be right back. WICC 600, The Lisa Wexler Show. Stay tuned for lots more news coming up. You know, I'm always looking for good news. So I have some. 203-333-9422. First of all, congratulations to the Norwalk High School Marching Bears. Do you know they won their third consecutive U.S. Bands National Championship on Saturday at MetLife Stadium? This is the most competitive division. They beat teams from New Jersey, South Dakota, and Pennsylvania. That was their fourth national title in 6 years. And they topped their own score in terms of how many points that they gathered from 2018. The Norwalk High School band leader is Chris Rivera. Congratulations to you. You don't do this without a great leader. He says to win one championship is phenomenal, but to win three in a row is something, you know, that can only be accomplished by hard work, determination, and a desire to accept nothing but perfection. And he got to perform in an NFL stadium. The band consists of 145 students, including woodwinds, brass, percussion, and color guard. The performance was called the Ripple Effect, which he said signifies how one action can create multiple reactions, just as a stone getting dropped into water creates many ripples. The Marching Bears also won their third straight New England States Championship. Hoo-ha, have you seen any video of them? They wear these very cool green and black outfits. Have you ever been in a marching band? 203-333-9422. It is one of the cooler things. I will tell you that I was a complete nerd for most of my life. What a shock. But I wanted to do something that would make me more like everyone else. And I was completely unathletic. So I went to the girls who twirled. And they were, I went to a public high school, Lawrence High School. Which was part of the five towns. And the towns of Woodmere, Cedarhurst, Lawrence, and Inwood went to Lawrence High School. And I was very segregated, to be honest. I was tracked. I was in all these honors classes and everything else. So I had the same group of 30 friends from class in to class out. And I didn't know too many more people except people in Model Congress. And I told you I was a nerd. But I decided that I wanted to go out of my nerddom to do something a little different. So I approached the girls who were the baton twirlers. And they were a bunch of really, really nice Italian girls. And they were fabulous. And I said, and by the way, the reason I'm mentioning that is because our high school, I don't know about your high school, but our high school, we had sort of segregated clans. And to some extent, they were based on ethnicity. I'm not saying I didn't have friends that weren't Jewish, but the majority of my friends were. I'm not saying I didn't have some black friends, but the majority of my friends were white and Jewish and girls and boys like me. But, you know, but not all of them. So anyway, and my school, thank goodness, was diverse before it was a big deal. It was diverse. That's what it was. It was a public high school. So I went to these girls and I said, would you please teach me how to twirl a baton? I really want to become a twirler. They were so nice. Oh, so nice. They said, sure, Lisa, we'll teach you. And I never took a professional lesson. They taught me how to twirl a baton. It was probably the most exciting thing I ever did in high school. And I did a lot of things, but it was the most exciting thing. First of all, I wore a uniform. I had little white boots. And I wore this blue and gold uniform because Lawrence High School was a blue and gold school. Those were the colors. We had our Lawrence jackets. I'll never forget the Lawrence jacket. It was like this wool felt kind of a jacket. And getting your Lawrence jacket was a big deal when you went to high school. It had Lawrence on the back of it. And I wore this twirling outfit. And I remember my stats. You want to know what my measurements were? 35, 25, 35. Pretty good in high school, right? Pretty sexy. And I wore my twirler outfit, my little white boots, and I learned how to twirl. And I twirled night and day. Night and day. My baton was attached to my hand. And I'm a lefty. And I twirl with my right hand. Now that I think about it, isn't that strange? I twirl with my right hand. I don't twirl with my left. I guess that means I'm a little bit ambidextrous, right? Anyway, I twirl with my right hand. I put the baton in my right hand. I had to learn how to twirl with my right hand because the routines were all right-handed routines. So I have great admiration for the Norwalk Marching Band because I was in a marching band as a twirler. And we would march behind the Lawrence High School Marching Band in parades. And I had the best good time. I loved it so much. I twirled through high school. I still have a baton at home. 203-333-9422. I can still do a thigh roll, a hand roll. I'm not sure I can do the belly roll anymore. And as for the one where it goes up in the air and I turn around and I catch it, I never was really very good at that one. I probably mastered it for like 10 seconds. 203-333-9422. Coming up with more good news and maybe some other news as well on the Lisa Wexler Show. Stay tuned. And welcome back to the show. 203-333-9422 is our number. 203-333-9422. So just a recap of the top stories of the day. Remington Arms not having a good day as the Supreme Court refused to take its appeal of the Connecticut Supreme Court, which had decided that under state law, the CUTPA law, Connecticut Unfair Trade Practices Act, that under state law, Remington Arms could be tried on the issue of whether or not they were liable with respect to their marketing and sales of AR-15s, whether or not it violated the Connecticut Unfair Trade Practices Act. Remington had argued that they were not liable based on their blanket immunity that they were granted pursuant to a congressional federal statute. And when the Supreme Court said, yeah, we have to agree about the federal statute, but that doesn't mean that you can't be liable under a state law, Remington Arms immediately appealed it to the Supreme Court. And I think it's fair to say that they thought that they could get four Supreme Court justices to decide it, because let me tell you what's at stake here. It's a very, very important case, very, very important day for people who are looking at this issue, whether you're on the side of gun control or gun rights. What will happen now with Remington is that they will end up having to defend themselves in all 50 states. Because it's hard to imagine a state that hasn't been afflicted by some kind of gun violence. I don't know that there is one. Certainly at least 30 that I can think of off the bat, and so can you. And so what will happen now is that smart lawyers in all of these states on behalf of gun victims will be looking through their own state statutes to come up with a statute that is similar in intent to the Connecticut Unfair Trade Practices Act. Maybe it's called the New York Unfair Trade Practices Act or the Louisiana Unfair Trade Practices Act. And by the way, that act allows treble damages for certain things. I mean, it's big money. And so lawyers in all these states are today, and I guarantee it's happening today, busy scurrying their law books to say if they can do it in Connecticut, we can do it here. And eventually the Supreme Court may have to end up taking an appeal of somebody's case. But right now, Remington could not persuade four justices to hear the case. They were hoping that four justices would grant what they call the writ of certiorari, which is the fancy word for the writ that is technically legally granted in order to take the case, and that then all nine justices would hear it, and the reputation of this court being rather conservative, they were hoping that this case would go away because it would affirm the supremacy of the immunity of gun rights manufacturers. This is a huge loss today for Remington. It really is a big day on their calendar. And it's a huge win for Sandy Hook Promise, for the Koskoff, Koskoff and Beter firm, which is based right here in Bridgeport, Connecticut. This is going to put them on a national map. They've always been known locally as a prominent law firm that represents plaintiffs in a whole range of different kind of actions. But this is the kind of case that can make a national reputation for someone. So congratulations, Josh Koskoff, who's been on the show more than once, and who lives in my town in Westport, and who practices law in Bridgeport, taking over from where his father, his late beloved father, started. It's a big thing. It's a big thing today. 203-333-9422. No matter where you stand on the issue, today is a big day on the calendar. It's 11:39. 203-333-9422. All right, what else do I want to tell you? Oh, let's talk a little bit about Google. We must talk about this. There's two stories I want to talk about. Google and what's happening with respect to the Trump administration's Environmental Protection Act. So let me start with Google first. It's called Project Nightingale. And let me just back up a minute and talk about how unbelievable it is. You know what I'm saying here, that if you're a parent of a kid who's over 18 and he's in some kind of trouble, he's either having a psychological breakdown or addicted to drugs or something and disappears for a while, but you find out has been in a hospital. Let's talk about the fact that as a parent of a concerned person or as a sibling of a concern of someone you're concerned about, according to the HIPAA rules, you can't get any information telling you anything. They clam up like crazy. They even clam up husbands and wives, right? Am I right? They say HIPAA, and they won't tell you anything at your local hospital or doctor's office, even if you know someone in your life is truly in trouble and you really care and you really think you can be part of the solution. They won't say a word, zip, 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 because of the protection, the privacy protection of our, theoretically, of our laws. But if you're Google, not so fast. Because what happened is Google made a contract with Ascension. Ascension is an enormous healthcare provider system. They're so big that at one time they owned St. Vincent's. St. Vincent's Behavioral Health Hospital, which is for mental illness. It's located in Westport, and St. Vincent's big hospital located in Bridgeport. And Ascension owns many different healthcare providers in many different places. They made a contract with Google that Google would be outsourced in order to help them gather data in order to help them improve their delivery of healthcare. And so because of that, 150 employees of Google had access to the database and the healthcare records of everybody that was treated at Ascension. Isn't that nice? According to the Wall Street Journal, Google secretly gathered millions of patient records across 21 states on behalf of Ascension. They dubbed their effort Project Nightingale. They didn't tell the patients. They didn't tell the doctors. Rob Copeland is the reporter. He wrote that the data amassed in the program includes lab results, doctor diagnoses, hospitalization records. It amounts to a complete health history, complete with patient names and the dates of birth. Remember that a lot of times, this is the big takeaway. I want you to understand. My daughter took a master's in healthcare management at NYU, and I know quite a bit about healthcare consulting as a result. And the bottom line is, for a lot of these outsourcing of trying to make healthcare better, patient records are reduced to numbers so that the data can be sifted and understood without specifically being able to say, oh, John Smith from Stratford, had diabetes. They're supposed to not be able to know that stuff. Whenever they do these huge studies, the data is supposed to be reduced by one or two people to a completely anonymous way of looking at the data in order to be able to come up with certain conclusions. And apparently that's not what happened here. What happened here is the names associated with the results and medical histories of individuals was turned over to Google. Google has responded that it's standard industry practice for a healthcare provider to share highly sensitive health records with tech workers under an agreement like the one it's signed. And that they argue that Google is allowed to build tools for the healthcare provider by using the private medical data of its patients, and that they don't have to notify the patients. And in fact, Google confirmed that it partnered with Ascension, which is a Catholic healthcare system based in St. Louis. The company calls itself a faith-based healthcare organization dedicated to transformation through innovation across the continuum of care. And Google maintains that all they were trying to do was to improve healthcare delivery on behalf of Ascension. But Forbes reports that as a part of Project Nightingale, Ascension uploaded patient data to Google's cloud servers, and that Ascension healthcare providers could use a tool called Patient Search to pull up individual patient pages. That's unbelievable. And by the way, they're not the only ones. Amazon's been trying to get at this, Apple as well. Google last year hired a healthcare executive to oversee its health initiatives, and they plan to absorb AI lab DeepMinds. DeepMind is a big artificial intelligence lab. They have their own healthcare division. They want to create an AI assistant for nurses and doctors. So you think you can't get a nurse or doctor now, wait until your machine is your nurse or doctor. The tech company has also been accused of inappropriate access to hundreds of thousands of healthcare records through the University of Chicago Medical Center. This was back in 2017, some more Google shenanigans. They had partnered with the University of Chicago Medical Center to develop machine learning tools, Read AI, capable of accurately predicting medical events. They wanted to predict whether you could be hospitalized, how long you would stay at a hospital, whether your health was deteriorating despite your treatment for conditions such as a UTI, pneumonia, or heart failure. They got in trouble for that too. So this isn't the first time they've had their wrist slapped. But really, it's unbelievable what's going on. So you and I, if our loved ones haven't signed a specific HIPAA disclosure at the doctor, we can't find out squat about someone we love. Maybe they were, God forbid, in a car accident or had a heart attack or a stroke. The doctor says, I can't tell you because of HIPAA. But Google, if you know somebody at Google, that's the way to go. They'll tell you. We'll be right back. And it's 12 minutes before the hour. 203-333-9422 is our number. 203-333-9422. Call me at 203-333-9422. It's a nice one, isn't it? It's a nice one. Call me at 203-333-9422. All right. What haven't we spoken about today? Oh, props to the Jeopardy contestant who, instead of going for the gusto to try and win some money at the very last question, basically wished Alex Trebek well, because Alex Trebek, the host of Jeopardy, by the way, trivia question. Okay, I got a good trivia question for you. Who was the original host of Jeopardy? Do you know who it was? 203-333-9422, just for fun. Just for fun. Because I know who it was. No fair Googling. No fair. Anyway, Alex Trebek has been associated with Jeopardy for a long, long time. And unfortunately, he is battling devastating pancreatic cancer. And he had just told the people in the audience that the recent medicine that he had been using for pancreatic cancer didn't work. So he was going to be doing a new trial. So I think it's really cool that one of the contestants basically bet his entire, except for $5, knowing he was doing a losing question. In other words, he walked away from Jeopardy with only $5 because he wanted to wish Alex Trebek well. And it made Alex Trebek tear up and cry which is understandable and quite wonderful. And it's very, very wonderful to be appreciated. Speaking of game show hosts, did you see that Pat Sajak is also not doing too well? And Vanna White, you know, the letter turner, she's actually going to be hosting the show. So the answer was Art Fleming. Thank you for your calls. Art Fleming, that's who it was. Art Fleming was the original host of Jeopardy. And those of you who skipped school to occasionally watch game shows know that I'm right. 203-333-9422 on the Lisa Wexler Show, 10 minutes before the hour. All right, let me give you some news you may have missed. We haven't discussed too much about the specifics of tolls. And I know Paul Pacelli is doing a fabulous job in the afternoons because I frequently get to listen to him myself. Thank you, Paul. Paul Pacelli right here on WICC from 2 to 6 p.m. every day. He's doing a really good job of getting into the nitty gritty. But right now, just to give you a recap, there are 14 toll locations that Governor Lamont is proposing. They're a dollar each way at three locations. The Route 7 mess on the Merritt being the closest one to us, but also Route 9 in Middletown and I-95 in New London. Two other toll locations would carry 75 cents. And remember, I'm saying this to you now, not only is it proposed, but remember that once they get the toll in, inevitably they raise it. You know that, right? I mean, has there ever been a toll that wasn't raised? And very often they don't tell you what the toll is anymore. I don't know how often you go into New York, but you don't even know what you're paying in Easy Pass anymore. They don't even bother telling you. They're cashless in some of the interchanges. You just see your bill at the end of the month. Right now, they're proposing that on I-91 in East Lyme and Waterbury along I-84, it be 75 cents each way. Each way, in other words. So, you know, presumably if you go one way, you come back home the other. So it's $1.50. Nine other locations are starting out at 50 cents. And they're claiming that Connecticut drivers will get a 20% discount. If you compare it to other states, it looks a little bit more reasonable per mile than some other states. But if you're planning to avoid the tolls by driving around on local roads, Dan Haar writes, consider this, Connecticut is allowed to place the gantry strategically to limit motorists' ability to skip the charges, even if that means placing the gantries far away from the targeted project. So in other words, if you think you can avoid it by going on the post road, theoretically, they can put the toll near the post road. Isn't that nice? Here's the problem. If your only commute is only 5 miles from Westport to New Canaan, which, by the way, isn't my usual commute, but it is my most common commute, like 41 to 38 and back and forth, I'm going to be paying another $460 a year just for the privilege of tolls. $460 a year. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Another $40 a month just to go 5 miles. But it's a lot more if you do the 34 miles between West Haven Center and downtown Westport. And that's the one that I'm going to be doing because that's how I commute to the radio station and back. It's going to be a lot more than $460 a year, probably be at least double that. Another $100 a month on my to-do list of having to pay for the privilege of living here in Connecticut in a state that already taxes me to own a car or lease a car, which New York doesn't do and other states don't do. In a state that already taxes me twice for every gallon of gas that I buy. It's a lot already with the transportation here. And if you want to take the train, it's a fortune, Metro North. 203-333-9422. So what I want to tell you is that a lot of tolls are being planned that will affect us. And I would say disproportionately affect us. Because we disproportionately have people and we disproportionately have money. And when I say we, I mean the people in Fairfield County. They anticipate a toll on I-684 in Greenwich at the Byram River, I-95 West Haven over the Metro North Bridge, I-95 Newark Westport, I-95 Stamford, I-91 and Route 15 Hartford Charter Oak Bridge Interchange, I-84 West Hartford, I-84 Newtown Southbury over the Housatonic Bridge, Route 15 Norwalk, Route 7 Interchange, that'll be a beauty. Route 9 Middletown, the bridge at Route 17. You know, when I spoke with Governor Lamont, My first question, I asked him if he thought the tolls were a distraction to his overall plan, and he balked at that. He said no, he thought that they were part and parcel and very important. But just think about how much airtime, how much breath, how much energy you and I could be spending on really looking at the nuts and bolts of a transportation plan if we didn't have to continually concern ourselves with the prospect of tolls. I think we would be spending a lot more time on the substance of where and what kind of infrastructure improvements. But the tolls take up a lot of our brain power because they are a daily continual reminder of how expensive it is to live around here. It's 5 minutes before 12, and a lot of people don't want them. 203-333-9422. A Connecticut study that will be happening at Yale is going to be about medical marijuana. The FDA has given the Yale School of Medicine and the medical marijuana supplier Connecticut Pharma approval to begin a human drug trial to study the effectiveness of marijuana-based medicine. Do you want to sign up? Is that what I see right now? Do I see a show of hands? Yale University School of Medicine's Dr. Rajita Sinha is the lead investigator for the clinical trial. The name is spelled S-I-N-H-A. You can probably find her email right online. She's asking some questions. She wants to know scientifically, how does the marijuana work? Who does it work for? What doses do you need? What symptoms can be alleviated? I think it's really important that we do that study because so many people are under the assumption that CBD is a fabulous palliative pain reliever. I think many people are under the impression that cannabis with or without THC can do wonders. And I think largely we have a lot of anecdotal evidence to suggest that. But because marijuana was classified as a narcotic along with heroin, there were a lot of studies that were prevented as a result of the way we classified marijuana for so many years. Let's go to Howard from Stratford. Howard, hi, you got a couple of minutes, but it's got to be quick.
I'll be quick.
Okay.
Transportation.
Yes.
I commuted for years from Stratford to Greenwich.
Oh, yeah.
There's a breakdown lane from Stratford to Westport that I have suggested many times could be utilized in either direction based on the flow of traffic in the morning and flow of traffic in the afternoon.
So, in other words, like a congestion lane for some of the time. Basically,
they did it. I was stationed in a Nike site in Chicago in the 70s.
Yep.
And that's what they did on Lakeshore Drive.
Okay.
They just changed lanes. That's one thing. The other thing that I suggested, and both notes were sent to the governor.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I suggested is because at a certain point in time, I took the train.
Yep.
And what I noticed is back in the time when we had the gas crisis, Sikorsky Aircraft, a lot of major corporations gave special parking spaces, reserved spaces for carpoolers. We don't have that at the railroad stations. Why don't we do that now?
Incentivize groups. Okay, I get it. Yeah.
Take the best spots in the parking lots and give them to people who are carpooling three people or more.
Well, I don't envy that commute stuff anymore from Stratford to Greenwich. Whatever it was, it's worse now, that I can tell you.
Listen, if our two governors, our two Democratic governors, back-to-back governors, if either one of them traveled from Stamford and Greenwich respectfully to the Capitol, we wouldn't have a traffic problem. They'd figure it out real quick.
Thank you, Howard.
It wouldn't have to be tolls.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate the call. I really do. And I hope you'll call again. We've only got a minute before noon. 203-333-9422 is the number. Do we have time? We can take one more call. Fran from Stratford again. We got a lot of Stratford people today calling in. Hey, Fran, real quick, what's your question?
Quickly, yes. All the overtime that cannot be accounted for the state of Connecticut, it was in the millions of the billions. They can't account for overtime given to a lot of these establishments.
Thank you, Fran.
Who knows?
I appreciate it.
Look into that.
I will, and I ask you to call back tomorrow when we have more time. Thank you for joining us, Clark Howard at noon. And then at 2 o'clock, our own Paul Pacelli, who hosts a four-hour fabulous Connecticut Today right here on WICC 600. I'm Lisa Wexler.